You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. It's been almost 3 years since the massive earthquake in Haiti. People around the world responded with donations in the billions of dollars. But despite this outpouring of support, Haiti Solidarity Network reports that life remains exceptionally harsh for many of the country's people. By every social, economic, and environmental measure, Haiti's prospects for earthquake recovery and post-earthquake progress remain exceptionally challenging. Haiti Solidarity BC is sponsoring a film that attempts to understand the gap between the money committed to relief and rebuilding efforts and the lack of progress on the ground. The film is called Haiti, Where Did the Money Go? And it will show this coming Wednesday, January 9th in Vancouver. Nicole Phillips is a staff attorney at the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti, and she's based in Port-au-Prince. She is adjunct professor and director of Haiti programs at the University of San Francisco School of Law. Nicole is going to be in Vancouver on Wednesday to take part in a panel discussion after the showing of the film, and she joins me now from California. Hello, Nicole.
Hello, good morning.
Now, I was amazed to read in the press release that accompanies the film that one in two households in the U.S. alone contributed money to Haiti relief efforts, and yet Haiti is still struggling to recover from the devastation of the earthquake. Did the film find an answer to the question in its title, where did all that money go?
Well, there isn't really necessarily an answer, right? It's a complex problem, and I think the film did a really good job of trying to figure out some of the different parts of it. What the film focused on was the lack of transparency and accountability for non-governmental organizations, the relief organizations that you and me and so many other Americans and Canadians donated to. Where did that money go? And they tried to trace that money. If billions of dollars have been spent and if millions of people were still living in internal displacement camps at the time when this film was made, then where did the money go? And so what they found was that, like I said, there really wasn't very much accountability or transparency, and that it was hard to tell where the money was being spent, and that when you go on the ground in camps that are being serviced by these big NGOs, that frequently the people living there would claim that they weren't receiving very much help at all, so that there really was this gap.
Yesterday, the Canadian government announced that it was going to freeze funding for new foreign aid projects in Haiti, and International Cooperation Minister Julian Fantino said he was disappointed with progress in Haiti. I guess he was there in November. What's your reaction to that move by the Canadian government?
I think that this is unfortunate, and sort of a good example, unfortunately, of why Haiti remains so unstable today. Those funds are desperately needed to build clean water and sanitation infrastructure and other development needs. Haiti has a cholera epidemic right now that has killed 8,000 people and impacted 630,000 others. And also this aid was promised. The Canadian government promised this aid, and arbitrarily breaking its promises with very little notice and no real specific reason, at least that they made public to the press, is the same paternalistic pattern that the West has been using with Haiti for centuries, really, and since their independence in 1804 and prior when they were a slave colony. So rather than a new approach to aid, which is what the government was claiming, this is sort of the same old approach to aid. Blaming the Haitian government and the people for lack of improvement and reconstruction is not necessarily beneficial. We see no sign of any self-critique of the implementation of these projects by the Haitian government at all. So it's unclear if the government is frustrated that there hasn't been improvement in construction projects. I can tell you that Haitian people are even more frustrated because they're living the results of this. And lastly, I would say that this is also hypocritical because the Canadian government seems to be blaming the Haitian government for lack of transparency and accountability as one of the reasons that there hasn't been a lot of progress on the ground. and this may be true, but the Canadian government, along with the U.S. government, France, and other European nations, supported flawed elections that put this government into place. But the Haitian people did not support this government or these elections. Current President Martelly was elected with less than 23% of the vote, which is the lowest voter turnout in Latin America in presidential elections since the 1940s. So I think for the Canadian government to do this, I would recommend they take more of a look at why they're doing this. And I just don't think that it's a very good a good policy.
Now, the UN has announced a plan to combat the cholera epidemic. What is that plan? What do you think of that plan?
Well, again, this seems to be a bit of a theme, but there isn't so far any transparency about what this plan is. The UN issued a press release a few weeks ago before Christmas stating that over a 10-year period, they had a plan to eliminate cholera from the entire island of Hispaniola, which includes the Dominican Republic and Haiti, and that that would include education as well as implementation of clean water and sanitation infrastructure. So we haven't seen the details of the plan. We don't know its feasibility or its impact. Of course, this is a welcome step. Cholera hit Haiti about 2 years ago, and this is really the first plan, comprehensive plan to eliminate cholera that there's been. So this is a good first step, but a little late. And also, the UN continues to deny any responsibility for the fact that its troops brought cholera to this country. Haiti had never had cholera before, and so through negligence of the cholera peacekeeper troop, of the UN peacekeeping troops, cholera was brought. So the other critical piece to this plan is funding. And so the UN has announced that it can put up about 1% of the $2.1 billion necessary for funding this project. It's found about 9% of additional budget in repackaged aid that's already been promised. So the question will be, can it be funded, and is this the same aid pattern that has existed in Haiti for years of underfunding projects and then wondering why they're not successful after a few years?
Now, you work on the ground in Port-au-Prince. Can you describe for us how people are living 3 years after the earthquake there?
It's a bit of a mix. There are definitely businesses have been rebuilt, shops are reopened, a lot of street merchants are out in the streets, they have the merchandise, some housing has been rebuilt. So we have seen some progress. But there are still about 370,000, at least, people still living in internal displacement camps since the earthquake time, which is about 10% of the population of Port-au-Prince, Haiti's capital. And in those camps, most of the aid has stopped in most of the camps. Disaster relief organizations had 1 year to 18-month mandates in a lot of cases. So there, and because on the ground in Haiti, there isn't access to basic services that we're used to, such as electricity, running water, sanitation, availability of toilets, etc. So conditions in the camps are inhumane. They're awful. And people that I spoke with last month were saying that this really wasn't a life, that they were not living a life at all. They were just sort of surviving day in and day out and not able to think about the future or hope for the future at all.
What's it going to take to get people out of those camps and into proper houses?
It will take a comprehensive rehousing plan that the Haitian government has yet to adopt. And this is going to require more than just the current plan, which has been to pay off in certain camps individuals to go find other housing. And the pay has been equivalent to about 1 year of rent. And actually, this was one plan that the Canadian government, CETA, Development Fund, funded in one of the main camps in Haiti, Chamonix. They took several thousand people and paid them about a year's rent and sent them on their way. And what we have found with a lot of these beneficiaries is that there's no work, and that after a year's time, they are not going to be able to afford to live anymore, and they may very well become homeless again. Unfortunately, we're anticipating that a lot of these aid recipients are going to be homeless again, and yet now a lot of these camps have been closed down. So where are they going to go, and what's going to happen? It could be a big crisis, unfortunately, by the middle of this year, starting soon. So we're hoping, and this is a plan that's really been bought in by the UN, you know, organizations like the Canadian government and other big NGOs, and we're hoping that they need more of a rehousing plan that provides for social housing, public housing, sustainable housing options for people rather than just paying them off.
And I want to ask you a little bit about your organization, the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti. And I know that you're focused on supporting democracy and human rights and the role of law there. How does the work that you do address some of the issues of poverty and housing and health that we've been talking about?
Well, we think that with all of the development money that's come in, either pre-earthquake or post-earthquake, that without a functioning and independent justice system, that it's sort of like building a school on a bed of sand, that without the foundation and trying to end impunity and corruption in Haiti, that it will not have a sustainable impact. That's the first thing. But the second thing is that the way our organization functions, which is a law firm, a public interest law firm, is that we don't just represent clients. We represent members of social movements, of the 90% of Haitians that only survive on a few dollars a day. And so all of our cases, for instance, we have rape cases. Most of our victims were living in displacement camps after the earthquake. 50% of our clients were under the age of 18. And we're working with them to work with the justice system and get victories for victims of rape, but also with grassroots women's organizations who refer the cases to us so that they can do advocacy while we do our cases and really spread the word to change the culture in Haiti for violence against women, but also to sustain grassroots movements, which really are the backbone of democracy in Haiti. And I'm pleased to announce that this summer we had four victories. We've tried four cases so far, and all four we got the maximum sentence against the perpetrator. So this is really exciting and shows that one of Haiti's most criticized institutions, the justice system, can work, that there are wonderful judges and lawyers and prosecutors that really care about justice in Haiti, and that if given the opportunity, will do the right thing.
So it sounds from what you're saying that there is an active and vibrant grassroots civil society, I guess, culture in Haiti. Would you say that that's the case?
Absolutely. And you know this because almost every week there are demonstrations, peaceful demonstrations of people going out into the streets and saying what it is they want. And that's their way of having their voice heard. Especially when they haven't necessarily had the right to vote, the fraudulent elections that have happened, that this really is their way of getting their voice out.
Now, the big aid debacle that Wednesday's screening explores is what conscientious people want to avoid. How can people who are concerned about Haiti offer the most effective support?
Question is asked a lot, and I think it's a really good one. And whether it's Haiti or any other organization, we always say make sure you research your organization. Don't necessarily just give to the usual suspects. And people are so generous with their money, and it's hard to be generous with your time to actually spend the time to research what organizations. And it seems none of us have enough time in our days, but really, really taking the time to research. Your dollars have a significant impact in where they go. And I know that there's a lot of partnerships in Canada with Partners in Health, which is an excellent organization. We would recommend, of course, donating to our organization, which you can do on IJDH.org, or it's also the other website. The website's also called HaitiJustice.org. And our main goal is to shore up the foundation in Haiti's justice system so that all future development aid can be sustainable and that people on the ground know their rights. We think that there will not be adequate housing for people or adequate water and sanitation for people until they know their rights, that they have that, and that they start demanding for it within their government. And so that's why we think this approach is critical and necessary to successful development and reconstruction in Haiti.
Thank you so much for talking to me this morning, Nicole.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
I've been speaking with Nicole Phillips, a staff attorney at the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti. She is based in Port-au-Prince, and she's an adjunct professor and director of Haiti programs at the University of San Francisco School of Law. Nicole Phillips will be here in Vancouver on Wednesday for a panel discussion after the showing of the film Haiti, Where Did the Money Go? We reached her in California this morning. The film is presented in collaboration with Haiti Solidarity VC, and it's going to be screening at the Van City Theater at 6:30 on Wednesday, and that's January 9th. Ticket information you can get at viff.org.